Good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to call the Legacy Finance Division meeting to order for February 27th. Thank you, everyone, for coming. And we've got a little bit of a full agenda here. Representative Mariani, we'd like to have you come up with your team here. And so welcome to the Science Museum. We're waiting for one more member to have a full quorum, so we'll wait to move your bill, but certainly welcome. And maybe do you want to start, Representative Mariani, or we have a quorum. I'd like to mix that up, so just a second, Carlos, or Representative Chair Mariani. The first bill we have then is House File 1448. I'd like to move that House File 1448 be laid over for possible inclusion. So we have the bill before us, and Representative Mariani, please go ahead. Welcome. Thank you,
Chair Villalobos, and thank you for working with my schedule so that I could do this early in your busy day today. I've got a busy day also at Public Safety, and we'll probably be going late into the night today. So
might be something going on today.
Yeah, just a few small bills there. I'm going to let these good folks, do pretty much all the talking. I just simply want to say that this truly is, the Science Museum is truly one of the most amazing, far-reaching public asset that we have in our state that has tremendous meaning in lots of different ways, including the educational enlightenment and access to the sciences. And quite frankly, the wonder and innovation for many of our young people. It's located smack dab in the middle of my district.
Thank you.
But frankly, it's a statewide asset. And it was my privilege many, many years ago to be the second author on the state's initial investment in this facility. And this is probably maybe the third or fourth bill that I've been involved with in some way or another with this fine institution. So I'm really proud that we've made that kind of investment as a state, and we're looking for a small continued investment with them. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to turn to the good folks in the Science Museum, have them introduce themselves to you and explain what the request is.
Thank you, for Chair Mariani, and go ahead when you're ready. You're right. They really are a treasure for the state. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for that kind introduction, and thank you, Chair and representatives. My name is Allison Brown. I'm the President and CEO of the Science Museum of Minnesota. I'm honored to be here today as the 16th President and CEO of the museum. And I'm joined by Lori Fink, our VP of Science, and John Severson, our Director of Strategic Partnerships. We are pleased to share a brief overview and the tremendous impact that the legacy funding has made on the Science Museum over the past 10 years in partnership with you. We are celebrating 112 years as one of the leading cultural attractions and statewide asset, as already mentioned. We were founded in 1907 as one of our leading cultural attractions and educational resources. We are nationally recognized for the work we do in education and exhibit production. And as a science and technology center, we specialize in innovative exhibits, interactive, that provide hands-on learning in formal science settings. We continue our work as a natural history museum, which is what we were founded as, with scientific research, collections, and exhibits. And we'll share a little bit of those with you today. We provide essential education support for teachers and students statewide, and we are proud to share some of those facts with you today, and in fact, around the entire state. You'll see in the color-coded map, which is up here on the screen, for the fifth straight year, we've reached all 87 counties of Minnesota, including that little tiny top of the state, which is the little Angle Inlet, and we have to go up into Canada and then drop back down into state to reach a little red schoolhouse that is up there. And our mission is to turn on the science, inspire learning, inform policy, and improve lives. Now, in addition to being a statewide asset, we also are known nationally for a number of the things that we do. And those include exhibit design and creation. And we include, which includes an exhibit we had here in St. Paul, Mental Health, Mind Matters, which has left our home here and will be in Rochester, Minnesota, starting in May, and then will tour around the nation. We also work on national networks We have a $14.5 million grant from NASA, and it was awarded to us in 2016 to create a network of informal exhibits that will be housed in hundreds of museums around this nation to bring their science to all of us and the wonder that science has come from NASA. Additionally, we create exhibits for other museums around the country, including our current projects are in Cincinnati, Tulsa, and Bismarck. We understand the importance of STEM, so science, technology, engineering, and math, and learning and the workforce readiness. We have a vibrant, productive economy here in our state. STEM literacy is really the foundation of much of that vibrancy that we have here. And we already know we have a shortage of workforce development here in our state. In fact, there was recently an article in the Star Tribune that just was, read 3 weeks ago. We have a shortage of 50,000 tech workers here in our state. And we are working to help shore up the talent shortage that we have now. And we do that through our hands-on learning and sparking youth's passion for STEM. And we do that because we know that from Maplewood to the farms in Marshall, we need science in all of the careers that we're doing. We're grateful for the support that we've received from the past 10 years through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Through that funding, we've already pointed out, been able to redo our statewide school programming. We've reached several hundred thousand students and educators every year, providing engaging programming and teacher training, did I mention it, in all 87 counties. We've also refined and broadened our communications with educators, funding the development of our science education catalog shared with over 11,000 teachers annually. We created a school liaison position to make certain that teachers know how to reach us and they can determine what is the best resources they can use from us that is what's best for their students. We developed standards aligned field school programs such as the Big Weather Experience, Storms on Stage, Tornado Alley, Omni Theater Film, and weather exhibits and curriculum guides. And most recently, we had our race outreach program that we've done in partnership with Penumbra Theater. And actually, the most recent thing we've done is Race, Are We So Different? With some small community-based exhibits. And they have been placed statewide in Worthington, Moorhead, and Rochester. These small exhibits were developed in conjunction with those communities, so they were relevant to the communities where they were placed. They developed programs important for those communities, and they were developed in conjunction with the other nonprofits in those areas, and there's programming that's built around them. They encourage visitors to explore the science, history, and impact of race in those communities. While a building preservation project required delays, a little bit of delay in our timeline, we are on track and on budget to complete the project. We also on track to complete the digitization of our very popular Omni Theater project system, and it will be digitized this fall. So we want you all to come back this fall and see the new experience of a digitized Omni Theater. I don't know if any of you have seen an Omni film. I hope all of you have. But when you come back, you will see a whole new experience this fall. And you also helped us bring the Bishop Whipple Collection and the develop of our American Indian collection, We Move and We Stay. It's a stunning exhibit. If you've not come to see it, we hope you will. Mr. Chair, it's my pleasure to introduce Lori Fink, our Vice President of Science, to share more on this important project.
Thank you, President. Go ahead. Before you get going, you just made a comment on one of those earlier images, and Representative Hausman had us up at, I think, in Duluth with and we spent much of our time discussing that school that you traveled to. They were having the state of Minnesota and the school district were struggling, I think, to fund them and do a good job of providing good education to those kids, right? It was quite a, we spent most of our time discussing that. Sorry, Dave.
No, it's fine. Please.
Thank you, President Brown.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thanks, Allison. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the pleasure to thank you for all of the previous legacy support that we have had in the area of Minnesota anthropology and cultural heritage. I was the project lead when it came to creating an exhibition using the Bishop Whipple Collection. The Bishop Whipple Collection is a collection of Native American objects that are both Dakota and Ojibwe, and they were collected by Bishop Whipple, the first Episcopalian bishop in Minnesota. Many of these objects were given as gifts and others that he had purchased. And in 1979, Shattuck St. Mary of Faribault was looking for a new home for the collection, and because they could not care for it properly. And so the museum stepped up to store the collection for them. And then in the early 2000s, they had another request. They were looking for someone to buy the collection. They needed the cash. And before sending it to an auction house, they approached the museum and asked if we wanted to purchase the collection. Well, if it wasn't for those legacy funds early on, we wouldn't have been able to purchase this collection, and it would not still be a collection in Minnesota. It would be separate pieces in private hands around the country or around the world. And so that was the first step that was really important for us to be able to tell the story. We then, with subsequent years of legacy funding, were able to then bring this collection to the people of Minnesota, both through digitization and creating an exhibition called We Move and We Stay. And one thing that was really special about this exhibition is that it was co-created with our own community members. It's an exhibition that tells the story of Dakota and Ojibwe people, and their story both historically and to the present. And it was a really special experience working with the community to create this exhibition. One of the myths that we learned about when we did some early evaluation about the exhibition was that many museum visitors thought of Dakota and Ojibwe cultures as cultures of the past and not something that was not thriving cultures still today. So we really wanted to make one of our main messages that showed that the culture is continuing to evolve and be innovative. And we did that in several ways. And two of the ways I'd like to share with you today were through objects. So that picture up there shows both a display of jingle dresses and a display of flutes. First, I'd like to talk about the jingle dresses. We have dresses that date from 1920, 1961, and then another one from 2014 that we commissioned as part of the project to make the exhibition. Jenny Kapperman was the artist who made the dress, and she was able to show by creating a dress, putting it alongside the one from the 1920s and 1960s that these dresses are really part of an enduring and flexible tradition, and that you can see that evolution displayed physically with the dresses. Jingle dresses started to appear in Ojibwe communities in the early 1900s, and as the Minnesota Mille Lacs band tells the story, a man's daughter was ill, and in a dream he learned how to make the dress and the steps of the dance. And then when dancers performed that jingle dance, dress dance, his daughter recovered. So today, women wear jingle dresses at powwows all across North America. And the dress and the dance have changed the dancers blend as dancers blend the tradition and new materials and influences. So this is an example of a jingle dress we brought today. It's part of our education collection, and you're welcome to hear the sounds of the jingles if you'd like. It was a really moving moment that I'd like to share with you when Jenny, the dressmaker, came into our collections for inspiration in making the dress. And the gasp that she made as she saw objects that she said she had never seen so many objects that were made by her own ancestors. And what she found even more amazing was that designs that she had been putting into her dresses for years were reflected in this collection. And so somehow she instinctively knew those designs of her ancestors. And it was very moving. So in the exhibition, you see these dresses. You can watch Jenny dance in the dress that she made and hear from her about what the dressmaking experience is like. And we have jingles so you can physically touch and hear it as well. So that's one way that we show innovation and evolution of a culture. The next one is these flutes that are being passed around. So to win a woman's affection, a man carved a wooden courting flute and wrote a song and then played it for her. She showed her own interest by listening. boarding schools and relocation programs stamped out the traditional courtship in the early 1900s, and the art of flute carving almost disappeared. Yet today, native carvers and researchers are relearning how to make the flutes. So again, we have flutes from the early 1900s, the 1970s, and the 1990s. We don't know the makers of the earlier flutes, but Mike Oker, who's Dakota, made the flutes in the 70s, and Jeff Chapman, Ojibwe, made the flutes from the 1990s, and these newer ones that we're passing around that are part of our education collection. In the early 1970s, pipe carver Mike Oker heard a recording of accordion flute, and he was inspired to make one, but he was unable to find somebody who was able to teach him how to make one. So he went and did his own research and developed his own techniques. Jeffrey Chapman started making flutes as a teenager in the 80s, and he learned the craft from Mike Oker. Now he teaches others about native flute traditions and how to make and play the flutes. In the exhibition, once again, you see the flutes, old and new. You can hear Jeff playing the flutes through a recording, and you can watch a video of Mike and Jeff talking about flute making. Legacy funding made all of this possible. The acquisition, the preservation, the digitization, and now the presentation of all of the collection and the stories that these objects tell. So thank you for making it possible. Our current request continues with us wanting to make more of our objects user-friendly and available through an online interface that that objects can be seen all across Minnesota and frankly the whole world. And this will make our Minnesota cultural heritage much more available. I'll let Allison continue from here to tell you more about some of the plans that we hope to make in the future with legacy funding. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Fink.
Thank you, Mr.
President
Chair.
Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Lori. It was really moving at the opening for the exhibit and to have the people there, and particularly Jenny, and watching Jenny and her mother look at the dress and then that's in our collection, and then watching them watch the video and Jenny performing. So thank you for making all of that possible. I know the community was very moved by the exhibit and the experience to be able to drive how the exhibit was developed. So we are asking for consideration for $1,650,000 over the coming biennium. Our current appropriation is $1,200,000 for fiscal year 18-19. We're asking for consideration of a significant 37% increase to our current appropriation. Funding will continue to support the outstanding results achieved, as we've discussed, with our statewide school initiative, while building on our work to deepening the impact we have on Minnesota families and communities and provide greater online access to Science Museum of Minnesota collections. These projects will be discussed in greater detail in a moment. Statewide sources represent 5.5% of our current total operating revenue, of which legacy represent approximately, thank you, one quarter of all the state funds we receive are 1.4% annually. The 1.4% represented by legacy is extremely important, even though not a majority revenue stream. We count on these dollars to serve students across the state of Minnesota with fun, interactive, stimulating, informal STEM education to spark their passion for science. The report on current FY18 appropriations we shared, support from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund of the Legacy Amendment in FY18-19 generally enabled the Science Museum of Minnesota to serve school audiences, to reach students and teachers in all 87 counties with valuable science, technology, engineering, and mathematics programming. We send science instructors statewide to Greater Minnesota schools to provide excellent, interactive, engaging STEM learning experiences. The museum's teacher professional development groups, workshops, and institutes for teachers translate key research into effective classroom practice, all with the goal of increasing STEM literacy and eliminating achievement disparities. Last year, over 162,000 participants experienced a school field trip, outreach program, or teacher professional development. It also supported our statewide waste programming, the details of which I shared earlier. The Science Museum of Minnesota respectfully requests $1,650,000 from the Legacy Committee for the upcoming biennium, and I'm going to ask John Severson to share the details of our request. Thank you.
So thank you, President Brown. We're a little tight on time, so I think I'm sorry, we might, we go ahead really quick if you can. And then we're going to have some discussion, and then we'll try to wrap up. Thank you. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Chair, members. I can be very quick because there are several key components to our proposal, most of which are built on prior projects which have received support and we have shared on today. The key element is a continuation of our statewide school initiative, but we will be layering in a new element, which is focused on families. We know that parents are the first and most important teachers, and so we want to build on the work that we have done with our family nights in St. Paul, learnings that we have taken from our camp program and other family-centered, and take that out of St. Paul into greater Minnesota to really help amplify the work that we are doing. We will continue to work with the school network, to work with partners to identify their needs, provide them with a myriad of resources, from field trips, outreach programs, the teacher institutes, which we have talked about. The other major component that we are seeking support for is additional dollars to work with our anthropology collections. Previous legacy dollars have supported the digitization of numerous elements of this collection. We are seeking support to continue that work, but one of the major pieces is to build a user-friendly interface. So we have a lot of data. It's just not very easy for people to access, and building this portal will allow students, teachers, researchers, and people literally around the globe to learn more about Minnesota's cultural heritage. So we, if that is brief enough, I will.
That's perfect. Yep. Thank you very much for coming. And any questions for members on so I don't see any questions. I think you've pretty much answered everything. And I know that you went through the list of things that Legacy has funded, and I think we'll try to get over there for a tour when you get the IMAX up and running again. And I think that was funded by previous committees and efforts through this committee. And I know you mentioned a lot of those others too. But seeing no more discussion, any final words, Chair Mariani?
Mm-hmm. Chair, just very quickly, clearly this is a place where science meets art, meets culture, and it all contributes to a deepening of Minnesotans, of what it means to be a Minnesotan, to understand our heritage. So appropriate for this committee and these investments that we created to continue to invest in that effort. Appreciate your consideration, and look forward to answering any other questions in the near future for you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I'll renew my motion that House File 1448 be laid over for possible inclusion. And so with that, do we vote on that? No, with that. So you're laid over, and I'm sure your future will be strong. So
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, Great River Children's Museum. And so as you come up, has anybody had an opportunity to take a peek at the minutes? I think Representative Erdahl was studying those intently. And Representative Heisman, would you be willing to move the minutes?
Minutes covered. I would make that motion, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for moving the minutes for our February 20th meeting. Any questions to the motion before us? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye. Those opposed, the minutes from the February 20th meeting are approved. Representative Wogemont, we have your bill. I'd like to move that House File 396 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, welcome, Representative Wogemont and your team. Go ahead and say some introductory words, and thank you for coming.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and thank you very much, committee members. I hope that you will enjoy the treats that we've brought from Stearns County, the Cold Spring Bakery. Hope you enjoy every bite on behalf of our Central Minnesotans. It's my firm belief, Mr. Chair and committee members, that the children of Central Minnesota deserve world-class opportunity for hands-on developmental learning. And that's why I'm proud to present to you today House File 396, which is asking for an appropriation of $250,000 in fiscal year 2020 and $275,000 in 2021 to develop a children's museum in central Minnesota. There are a wide variety of ways where the museum will benefit the entire region of central Minnesota. It will develop foundational skills in young children. It will strengthen family connections through creativity and exploration and play. It won't just benefit children and families. It will benefit the whole community by serving as a town square to bring community members together. It will address community diversity in a unique way, and it will contribute to the local economy because it will be a destination attraction for people from throughout the state to come and bring their kids in and see what we have to offer. I want to commend the work of my testifiers here. The Great River Children's Museum has really got its ducks in a row. They've been working on this since 2012. There's been 6 years of planning to go into the development of this children's museum with visits to more than 30 other children's museums. They've met with the city of St. Cloud, local school districts, all the major local organizations have had input in on the process. The board of directors is a working board, cooperates with volunteers, board committees, and really what's been setting this project in motion was a generous gift from Liberty Bank to give us a building in downtown St. Cloud just this past December. So that's why, you know, we've been working on this for 6 years, but that's why we're here in front of you right now. The impact on central Minnesota will be both educational and economic, and with that, I'd like to turn over to my friends here, Sarah McKeever and Greg Rigstead, to share their testimony.
Thank you, Representative Wogamont. Thank you for the treats as well. Pretty nice stuff there. Yeah. Go ahead, sir, and state your name for the record, and go ahead when you're ready, please.
My name is Greg Rigstead, and I'm a retiree from the St. Cloud Technical and Community College. And by the way, the Cold Spring Bakery provided the cakes for both my wife or my daughter's weddings, and they're really kind of fussy, so you know that it's a very good product. I'm happy to be here, by the way. I did testify in front of a legislative committee before. That was 42 years ago, and I'm thinking of making this a regular thing, so I'll be back in 42 years whenever that comes up. Anyway, I've been involved with the Great River Children's Museum since its inception, and it's been a wonderful experience. And I'm one of those that did go out and visit a number of children's museums, including those in San Diego and Albuquerque and Cleveland. And it's really fun to do that, by the way, because they're all different. They all come from some interesting places. I know that you've been very involved with children's museums. I took a look at the history, and you bet all the children's museums in Minnesota have come through this group at one time or the other. So I know you're familiar with what they do and how they do it. I think there's going to be one big difference with the Children's Museum in St. Cloud. And I got involved kind of from the outside because I'm an old grants writer and an old educator. But everybody else from its inception to now have really been involved in child development and in early childhood education. And that's the driving force behind this Children's Museum. And it still is. That's still the majority of the board. So I think it's really an exciting opportunity. And one last thing is, you bet the gift from Liberty Bank is a major gift. I mean, they walked out the door on November 18th, and we took it over December 12th, so everything worked. A lot of children's museums come into old furniture stores and old this and old that, and they got a lot of work and a lot of things to get furnaces ready and air conditioning ready. Hey, this was a working bank, you know. So not a children's museum, so we got to make it from a bank to a children's museum, but we got it in great shape, and we're really appreciative. And at that point, I'll turn it over to Sarah McKeever.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome. Thank you. Please state your name and go ahead when you're ready.
Yeah, I'm Sarah McKeever. Thank you for having us. I'm a board member on the Great River Children's Museum and a parent educator in ECFE, if you've ever had an ECFE class with any little ones in your life. We are here representing 14 members of our board who are currently sitting down for a board retreat, and that's why they aren't joining us today, but they're equally passionate about this project. So thank you for having us. I want to share a little bit about our project. Our mission is to create a place where every child, regardless of their background, and their caring adults can create, explore, discover, and be inspired by the extraordinary power of play. We want to meet a lot of needs that we see in our community, which our values are aligned to those needs, the first of which being that parents need a place to really go and disconnect from the stress of their everyday life and connect with their children. So it's going to be great for the well-being of both children and adults in the community. We see that children need spaces that are designed to teach them in the way that they learn best. And that's, as Greg said, why we have early childhood teachers involved in this project and really experts on child development. We see that children need adults who are connected to them in a meaningful way. And play is just a wonderful way to connect children and adults. And we have museum developers and family educators on our board specifically to help engage adults in the exhibits. We know that we all need creativity in our life. The psychologists that we have on our board and involved in the project are really excited that this space will help promote creativity, which is another key to psychological well-being. It's also a skill that kids are going to need going into the 21st century. Our museum will be a place where children can collaborate and use their creativity and critical thinking skills and problem solving to really develop those skills that they're going to need in jobs that we can't even imagine that they're going to have in 20 years from now. One thing that we're kind of known for in St. Cloud, around the whole nation actually, is the melting pot that we have of diversity. And that can create some tensions between people. So we value creating a space where people of all different cultures and backgrounds can come together and learn about each other in a playful way, because we recognize play as being the best way for people to gain an understanding and really build those relationships. We are already partnering with so many organizations across the community. It's just really exciting to see the collaboration that's coming around this project. We have representatives from higher education, mental health, early childhood family education, as we said, healthcare, finance, and business, and all different sectors of our community. So it's just really great to see the whole community coming together to work on this project. As Greg mentioned, we started back in 2012, really this group started thinking about this project, and then in 2014, the 501c3 was founded, and we joined the Association of Children's Museums as an emerging museum, which really gave us access to the data, the immense amount of data that they have that helped inform our decisions about what kind of space we would need and staff needs and how much attendance we could expect from an area similar to ours. And so that is basically how we did the feasibility study, and then the museum visits have just been amazing, the number of museums that people have visited among themselves. One of the museums that we've actually collaborated with is a local history museum, the Stearns History Museum. In 2015-16, we worked together with them and area businesses and CentraCare Health System to put out the Healthy Vill exhibit. And it was in the Stearns History Museum for 3 months. It was a great way to gauge interest in the community. 6,000 people visited that exhibit in the 3 month time span. So we knew there was a need in the community for something like this. So then over the course of some time, we expanded our planning group to bring in more people and explored sites. Where was this museum going to be located? And the Stearns History Museum was one of the spaces that was considered among others in neighboring communities. And we were thinking of doing another pop-up exhibit when, lo and behold, our focus kind of shifted. We started talking with Liberty Bank about the possible donation of their building in downtown St. Cloud. And the board membership was finalized to 14 people really brought on board, toured that building, explored the possibility of using that space, and it just really was amazing how many of the criteria of what we had needed in a space, how many things this fit, you know, being downtown in a great location, highly visible, very accessible. It's a block off of the bus stop, bus station. It's had the exact number of square footage we needed, great parking. So in December, the keys were exchanged and all the codes, and now we're building owners, so it's really exciting. So St. Cloud, this is going to really address a lot of needs in St. Cloud and the surrounding communities, providing that space for young children and families and bringing together people in our community. St. Cloud is the regional hub, so people come to St. Cloud from areas all around to do shopping and get cultural experiences. So this is going to be a destination attraction. And it's really exciting for the neighbors downtown because they're really looking forward to having family-friendly development. And if there was any doubt in your mind that this is a worthy project to fund, this winter should put all those doubts to rest because families in central Minnesota need places to go outside their own four walls to get together with other people and build that community through the long winter months. So our proposed use of the funds, first of all, we need to do safety updates to the building. It is a bank, and so we'll have certain things to do to get it up to fire code and get that usable for children and families. And one of the first things that's a cornerstone of all children's museums is a space for infants and toddlers. So on our main floor, we definitely know we want to have that, and that will be one of the first uses of our funds. And the name Great River comes obviously from the Mississippi. We really want to make sure we include the Mississippi River in our exhibits. And main floor is a great spot to put water, right? Because water flows downhill. So we're going to set that up on the main floor. It's a resource that unites everyone in the surrounding area. And water is just a lot of fun. Kids learn a lot from playing in water. And we will be putting that on our main floor as one of our first exhibits. So we really are thankful for the opportunity to present to you today. Looking for that funding in those first couple of years will really help get this project off of the ground, and it will get those safety updates, that infant exhibit, really start with that community engagement, building those connections between the community, and utilizing this amazing gift that we've been given to give back to our community. So really, thank you for your attention, and I will look to my colleagues here if they have any other statements or questions.
Thank you very much. Great story you have. I love that the bank's donated the building, and it sounds like you've quite an amazing, impressive journey of going to over 30 other museums, and so that's neat. Thank you. I have a couple questions here. Representative Erdahl, are you ready? He's enjoying the wonderful treats.
Well, you know,
we all are.
Mr. Chairman, with my schedule, I found this is the only time I get to eat. Committee meetings. So thank you for the goodies today. Mr. Regsted, I just want to caution you, never refer to yourself as an old educator. Former educator. Casts a bad light on some people. Representative Wolgamott, just three quick questions here. Do you know how many children's museums there are in Minnesota?
I went through them. I know in Legacy there's about...
Mr. Regsted.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's right.
I would be guessing a little bit, but about eight. I can run through them. I think, you know, you've got the wonderful one in St. Paul, which is, by the way, really prominent nationwide. I mean, everybody looks to it for their leadership, et cetera. But they work with Rochester. Mankato's got one. Duluth's got one. Give me a second. Grand Rapids has got one.
Hastings
Sound? And I know Wilmer's trying to start one. They've got one incubator working in Wilmer. I think that's it.
Representative Erdahl.
Hutchinson has one.
Oh, Hutchinson. Yes. I visited Hutchinson. I'm
my
sorry.
District.
Oh. It's going to be a long day at
the
this
future.
Rate.
They won a vote.
But we went down to visit Hutchinson. It was very nice, and they're good people.
Thank you. And is Hutchinson, would that be the closest one to you?
Probably, yes. I think other than that, St. Paul's probably closest, yeah.
Okay, thank you. And just one more.
Representative Verdahl.
Ms. McKeever, I think you mentioned you'd done a survey that would indicate the number of children you would have. Do you have a number? How many children do you expect to use this?
Was it 60,000 a year?
Yeah, we've got a business plan that we have expended. I don't remember that number exactly. I do know that 70% of our income we expect to come from membership and admissions. Numbers exactly, I'm sorry.
I want to say 60 to 70,000 a year. Yeah.
We could get you that business plan if you're interested, however.
Oh, that's all right. But
Representative Verdahl.
So your answer is lots.
Lots. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I think we'll do very well, actually. It's a nice market. You know, St. Cloud's the regional hub, that type of thing. So we'll pull in a lot of those people, we hope at least.
Thank you.
All right, thanks. Oh,
I could mention one thing about the building, by the way. Liberty Bank not only gave us...
Mr. Reistad.
But they also gave us 1 year's taxes and 1 year's building insurance. So it was very nice. They did a nice job for us, and we appreciate it.
Where is the bank?
Right downtown on Division, as you're going by. It's very prominent. It's got a bell tower. It's in good shape. It was, by the way, Jack Frost Hatchery, for those that have been around for a while. They actually had a hatchery on the third floor.
Okay, so we're 2 minutes, two questions. I think you're done, Representative Verdahl. Thank you. Representative Hausman.
And Mr. Chair and the author of the bill, if we extend the North Star to St. Cloud, all those children between here and St. Cloud will have a convenient way to get there.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hausman, I could not agree more. Thank you for saying that.
but just following up, Mr.
Representative Hausman,
on Representative Erdahl's question, I'm assuming, do you have some sort of partnership between the St. Paul Children's Museum and you, particularly, for example, when you develop that infant area?
That was our first stop when we came up with the idea, was down to the Children's Museum in Minnesota. And we've had a lot of discussions with them. As a matter of fact, they outlined this discussion for us to say, so we're really working in partnership. And a group of us are going down to the Science Museum, too, by the way, in about a week, because they're going to these groups do our exhibits down the line, if you know what I mean. So, yeah, I know we've had a very good working relationship, I think, with all the children's museums. It's a nice community. These are people that are really trying to make lives better. So it's been a good group.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hausman.
Because exhibits change, I mean, I'm sure you also share those resources.
That actually was the museum exhibit that they were thinking of getting, the traveling exhibit, was from the Minnesota Children's Museum, and it was going to be housed in the Stearns History Museum. And then our focus went to, all of a sudden, this building donation came. So, yeah, our focus has been entirely on getting this building up and running now. So it's exciting. And the museum in St. Paul has been very supportive.
Thank you. Representative Hausman. Representative Bowe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually had two questions, but one has been covered already. So my question I have remaining, Ms. McKeever, how the heck did you persuade the bank to give you the building?
Oh, relationships, right? I mean, we have people on our board from all different sectors of the community. So somebody had a conversation with somebody, and it just, you know, wheels went into motion.
By the way, they first offered to sell it to us for $600,000, which wasn't a bad deal, because it's a $1.6 million or, you know, whatever number you want. It's a very expensive building. And we were happy with that, and we're starting to work on that when they came back and said, no, we're going to give you the building and everything. So it was just, on their part, great generosity.
Absolutely.
Representative Bowe.
Thank you.
Thank you. I expected a question from one of our – I was involved with the freshman training, and the freshman, I think one of the – you might want to keep the vault, because I think one of the freshmen was stuck in a vault, if I remember right. Damath? Representative Damath, I think one of her trivia get-to-know-you questions was, were you – she was stuck in a vault. I'm sorry. Representative Heitzman.
So my family, as you might imagine, is quite a connoisseur of museums, Mr. Chair. And I have noticed that when we've been to a museum, my kids often are very excited, but that does wear off. And this is part of the grouchy side. There is a limited amount of money available. And as museums try to regenerate interest, an introduction is always very exciting, but then there's museums that have been around for a long time, and they need to kind of reinvent themselves, and they have projects that often come to this committee. And I just hope that folks are being very cautious, not overly optimistic in projecting what their expectations might be, because those challenges do come up, and we hear about it, especially as museums are trying to become relevant once again, or interesting once again, and a new presentation is being generated or created and proposed to the legacy. I guess my question is as we're looking around the state, I hope that we are being very cognizant of that, and that we're looking to private sector partners like you already have with the acquisition of your building, but ongoing cash is not always easy to come by. So,
Representative.
One of the nice features, because I've worked in nonprofits for a number of years, to children museums is there is an income source between memberships and admissions alone. We usually pick up 70%, which is a major part of the fund. So that's one of the really nice things about working with children's museums. There's still that 30%, and yeah, you're going to see people come back a little bit because they need to develop and that type of thing. But compared to a lot of nonprofits, there is a built-in source of income. And I think in St. Cloud community, I think people are ready for this, and I think we're going to see a lot of public-private partnerships coming in for this. So,
thank you, sir. Representative Wogerman, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, committee members. And Representative Heitzman, I can assure you that this board and these members, you know, like we said in the presentation, they put 6 years of planning, 30 visits, partnerships with the city, the school district, local organizations. I really can't think of what more they could do to be looking towards the future and getting input from community stakeholders to meet your criteria. Mr. Chair and committee members, I would just like to close with a personal touch. I'm a dad. I've got two daughters who would greatly benefit from this museum. I'm a ninth grade football coach and a Sunday school teacher, and I have had countless conversations with parents and students about how much this project would mean to them and to better their lives. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, I wholeheartedly urge you to support this funding request. When you do consider it to be put into the omnibus bill, I know that doing so will make sure that the children in St. Cloud, children in Central Minnesota, and families all throughout our state will have a world-class opportunity for hands-on developmental learning that I think we need now more than ever. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, board members, and thank you, members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative Wogemont. Representative Heitzman, I didn't know if you had a follow-up, another question or not. I'm sorry if I cut you off there. Sorry, my apologies. Thank you very much for coming, and it's a great story and great effort you're doing out there. With that, I renew my motion that House File 396 be laid over for possible inclusion. And thank you very much for coming. Representative Hausman, I think I'd like to invite up the Humanity Center and veterans. Representative Hausman, thank you very much. As you come forward, we're running a little bit over, but I know you can accommodate that. And again, you have a great story to tell here, and we're happy to hear it. So, Representative Hausman,
would you like me to move the bill?
Oh,
file 1474. I will move that for possible inclusion.
Yes, please do, and which you did do. Okay, Representative Hausman has moved House File 1474. To be laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Representative Hausman, and go ahead.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm proud to support the Minnesota Humanities Center legacy funding request. While the center is located on the east side of St. Paul, the organization, in fact, provides humanities programming to Minnesotans throughout the state. Over the past 2 years, they have delivered important programs with legacy funding that includes Why Treaties Matter. You see the poster here. An important exhibit located in the state capitol and an exhibit traveling around the state. A K-12 educator institute that has provided new and innovative curriculum materials for educators across the state, and the Veterans Voices program that has partnered with veterans groups across the state to amplify the experiences and contributions of veterans. I'm joined by staff members from the Humanities Center who will provide the members with more details. In fact, one of the staff members is the interim president. We are in a leadership transition. And so I'm actually meeting her for the first time today. So we have Anna Leandro, who will provide the members with more details. And then I should also recognize that we have outside testifiers who've traveled to provide members, and they are a high school social studies teacher from Northeast Range School, an associate professor of art history at St. Catharines University, and a Marine Corps veteran who was the 2017 Veterans Voices Awardee.
Thank you very much, and welcome. And just kind of keep in mind, we have about 15 minutes. So, yep, thank you. Welcome. Sorry to.
Good afternoon, Chair Lilly, and members of the House Legacy Committee, and thank you very much, Representative Hausman, for sponsoring the bill. We really appreciate the opportunity to update you today on the essential work of the Minnesota Humanities Center that is funded by the Legacy Amendment. My name is Ann Hunter, and I am the interim president of the Minnesota Humanities Center, the only statewide organization ensuring that the humanities remain relevant and accessible to all Minnesotans. May I ask, can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah, okay. Yep. Thank you.
I'm joined by my colleague, Leandra Birchall, who is our vice president, in the next 15 minutes.
Sorry.
I will introduce the organization briefly. Leandra will cover the new innovative programs we have planned for the next biennium, and our three guest witnesses will talk about the impact that the Humanities Center has had on their work and their lives. And then we'll reserve a minute or two for questions at the end. As you may know, the Minnesota Humanities Center is committed to building a thoughtful, literate, and engaged society. That's our mission. As a St. Paul-based nonprofit with a state charter, we offer programs and events throughout Minnesota, and we operate a full-service event center that hosts about 10,000 guests per year. Our historic building on the shores of Lake Phelan was built in 1924, and it occupies the only remaining wing of the original Gillette's Children's Hospital, if you remember that place. That earned it a place on the state's Register of Historic Places. It's a fitting place for an organization that has its roots in education. The wing that we're located in was once the schoolhouse. Just a point of note, we are also the state affiliate of the National Endowment for the Humanities. So what do? People don't understand the humanities necessarily. Unlike academic institutions that study the humanities, we focus on public humanities, bringing literature, ethics, philosophy, civics, language, law, and history out of scholarly institutions and into the lives of Minnesotans. We believe that public humanities foster greater empathy, compassion, dignity, and understanding among people, and that those traits are essential to building an engaged Minnesota. The Humanities Center creates programs that explore the complexities of human experience. Our work takes several forms. In the interest of time, I won't list them, but you'll hear more about them from our guest speakers. Our programs are centered in four core values, including recognizing the power of story and the danger of absence. You'll hear more about that when we talk about our absent narrative program. We ground our values in the philosophy that the community leads and we follow. So last summer, we conducted 10 listening sessions in communities across the state. We held another 16 listening sessions over the winter, and a dozen more are planned for this summer. This feedback not only informs our programs, but it affirms the work or the importance of the network that we have with state partners. Since our founding in 1971, we're almost 50 years old, we have partnered with thousands of organizations and individuals around the state. We engage Minnesotans of all backgrounds and all geographies through five core programs. Four of those are generously funded through Legacy Amendment, and we are most appreciative. Today, we are requesting, respectfully, $2.195 million in legacy funding over the next 2 years to fund four essential programs Leandra is going to talk about that and their impact over the next biennium. Millennium would be a long time.
Right. Stretch it out a little.
Leandra, take over the mic for me, would you?
Please state your name and go ahead when you're ready, please.
Thank you, Ann, and good afternoon, Chair Lilly and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Leandra Burchell. I am the Vice President of the Minnesota Humanities Center. Before I start, I want to remind you that there is an overview of each legacy-funded program area in your packet. Veterans Voices amplifies Minnesotans' veterans' experiences through storytelling, literature, workshops, and our popular Veterans Voices Award. In the last funding cycle, we hosted 27 Veterans Voices events in 18 Minnesota communities, attended by nearly 1,500 people, many of them veterans. And since 2013, we have recognized the contributions of 145 veterans from 83 communities through our Veterans Voices Award program. In FY19, we're focusing on several new or expanded initiatives, one being America's Secret War Educator Toolkit. It's a new inclusive curriculum that brings to light the untold stories of the Hmong people enlisted by the CIA to help prevent the spread of communism in the shadows of the Vietnam War. Their stories make Minnesotans' history and identity more complete. Our educator salons in Duluth and St. Paul provide college-level educators with reintegration strategies for student veterans. Humanities faculty explore war, remembrance, memorials, monuments, and past and present social issues facing both veterans and non-veteran students. We plan to extend this program to a third site in Greater Minnesota. We're also expanding our Warrior Writers Workshops for veterans to 5 sites in Greater Minnesota. And we have re-envisioned our signature Veterans Voices Award ceremony to center more on the voices of veterans and the transformative power of the humanities. Looking ahead to FY20, we plan to build or create 2 new veterans programs. The first is Hikes in Humanities, an immersive place-based program that introduces new explorers to Minnesota's geography, history, and cultural complexities. The program is open to all Minnesotans, but we're targeting veterans and underrepresented or marginalized communities. Through this pilot, we aim to change the narrative of who can explore the outdoors and what it truly means to participate in public lands. Our literature and medicine program creates opportunities for veterans to build relationships and share their experiences in a veteran-centered setting. Participants engage with books that create opportunities to connect their own experiences with others across time. Readings range from Homer's Iliad to Tim O'Brien's The Things They Carried to Lisa Bowder's Powder, writing by women in the ranks. Shifting to our work in the American Indian community, let's talk about the expansion of our Why Treaties Matter program. We'll circulate a couple of teacher educator guides for your reference. As you may know, Why Treaties Matter is a nationally recognized, award-winning traveling exhibit created in partnership with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council and the Smithsonian Institution National Museum of the American Indian. Exhibit content and educator guides draw on the cultural understandings and wisdom of the 11 sovereign nations that reside within the borders of the state of Minnesota. In FY19, we plan to re-engage those 11 sovereign nations to create new content that addresses identified gaps. We will be touring the exhibits to at least 6 new sites, including Century College, Eastside Freedom Library, and Park Rapids Area Schools. The exhibit is also on permanent display on the 3rd floor of the state capitol. Demand for the touring exhibit is high. Even though our FY20 application process doesn't begin until June, 30 host sites have already expressed interest. Our third legacy-funded program area is K-12 education. Current programs build on the Humanities Center nearly half-century history in teacher education. Our workshops are immersive and our immersive experiences examine the manifold cultures alive across Minnesota, making us a go-to destination for transformative educator training in the state. In the 2018-19 biennium, we hosted 89 educator training events in 24 communities, attended by more than 3,000 education professionals. I'd like to highlight 4 K-12 areas of focus in the next biennium. In response to requests from educators, we're expanding our absent narratives resource collection. While preparing to revamp our antiquated digital platform, which provides free resources to thousands of educators annually, we plan to publish 2 absent narratives books in each of the next 2 years. Building on the success of the Dakota Focus Learning from Place with Dote Field Trips, we are working with community members in the Duluth Fond du Lac area to develop a Learning from Place experience that is grounded in the Ojibwe history, culture, and perspectives. Design is underway and implementation is scheduled for spring 2020. Duluth Public Schools have expressed great interest in this program. We're also adding an opportunity for educators who have been on a Bidote trip to receive additional support on how to share the experience with their students. Our week-long Educator Institute will immerse a statewide group of participants in our foundational approach to increasing student engagement through absent narratives. We plan to redesign this program in FY20 to accommodate a broader participant group. And this year, we're collaborating with members of the Somali communities to publish a youth anthology that will be distributed within the communities and to educators across Minnesota. This resource will serve as the starting point for rigorous discussion during a series of workshops designed to prepare educators to meaningfully engage with Somali students and their parents. 1,000 hardcover copies will be distributed to St. Cloud, Rochester, and the metro area, as well as to workshop participants, Somali organizations, libraries, and individuals. And we're very excited to be launching 2 new community grant lines this summer, the Community Partner Fund and the Humanities Innovation Partnership. The Community Partner Fund recognizes that neighborhood and community organizations are the keepers and carriers of cultures, histories, and heritages, and that effective partnerships among these organizations can build relationships, address community goals, and amplify voices and stories that have been stolen, erased, or misrepresented. The Community Partner Fund incorporates the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund goals of actively engaging Minnesotans in their history, celebrating the richness of our differences while building greater understanding and connection to the values that bind us together, creating opportunities for all Minnesotans to get directly involved as critical thinkers, and improving organizational development and evaluation. Absolutely.
Okay. Are you, you want to just finish your thoughts and then, or were you there?
I was almost there. So goodbye.
Thank you very much. Go ahead, state your name when you're ready, and or go ahead when you're ready. Sorry, after saying.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Leanne Ackman, and I have been a high school social studies teacher for 24 years. Serving the students from St. Louis County School District, specifically at the Northeast Range campus, which is located in Babbitt. I am both a humanities program participant and a 2016 Summer Educator Institute participant. The Educator Institute brings together educators from across the state to help them be more effective teachers in the classroom, primarily through its signature absent narratives approach. Participating in this week-long institute, I rediscovered my passion for the humanities, created a new awareness of my new role as an educator in today's day and age, and developed a sense of urgency and responsibility to do what I could to encourage others to become involved as well. I have since returned to the Humanities Center to serve as a panelist for the Educator Institute in 2017 and as a past participant consultant in 2018. The Humanities Center is very important to me as an educator because of their dedication and assistance to teachers, administrators, and educational support staff throughout the state. Each year, the Humanities Center continues its education legacy through new and innovative workshops, events, and field trips that examine the many cultures alive across Minnesota. It is because of the Minnesota Legislature and the legacy funding that allows them to provide educators like myself with new and evolving best practices in teaching that include over 1,000 unique resources that are curriculum appropriate, humanities focused, digitally available, and affordable or even free. An example of the unique work that the Humanities Center provides educators is the absent narrative approach. This approach is a relationship-based way to create equity within systems and communities. Based in the humanities, it recognizes that institutions and systems are first human communities made up of people and their stories. Absent narratives reclaim people's histories and stories that have been left out, lost, stolen, or even erased. The Minnesota Humanities Center's core values guide this work and offer an authentic and unique way to engage students. Through absent narratives, the Humanities Center is reframing the achievement gap by addressing the relationship gap for students. This relationship-based approach means that educators are supported, empowered, and inspired to work together to create meaningful change in outcomes for Minnesota students. I encourage you to continue, as you have in the past, to fund the Minnesota Humanities Center and the work it does for our educators and for our diverse student population.
Thank you very much. We're down to about 3 minutes for the next two requests. I just want to just briefly introduce, we have some students that have joined us here today. They're here down for us. Speaking for the smoke-free generation. So thank you for joining us in the Legacy Committee, and welcome to St. Paul, to your capital, and thank you for coming down here and lobbying us and fighting for stuff that's important to you and to all of us. So thank you. Go ahead, sorry. Thank you, Professor.
Yeah. Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm honored to be here. My name is Amy Hamlin. I work at St. Catherine University, where I am an associate professor of art history and mission chair for liberal arts. The Humanities Center is meaningful to me as both an educator and as a liberal arts advocate because the Humanities Center catalyzes institutional transformation. In August, I participated with 8 colleagues from St. Kate's in Learning from Place, Bidote, which you heard Leandra mention just now. Learning from Ramona Kiddo Stately and Ethan Nerdals was as powerful as being present on land sacred to the Dakota people. As a citizen of Minnesota, born and raised in St. Paul, and of settler colonial ancestry, I was ashamed by what I learned. Stories that I had not learned in my public education in the 70s and 80s, and had not bothered to learn as an adult. More importantly, I was empowered to transform that complicity into accountability. What does accountability look like in the humanities? That's a question with a future orientation. And it's a question that the Minnesota Humanities Center courageously and continuously asks the people of Minnesota. Through their professional development, opportunities like Learning from Place and Absent Narratives, both of which I've sent cohorts from St. Kate's to participate in, the Humanities Center centers stories and relationships that create bridges for learning, reflection, and action. The actions that Learning from Place have catalyzed at St. Kate's are multiple. For example, we've begun integrating land acknowledgement in our meetings, in our classrooms, and in our public events. We've initiated a learning community of past participants in the Bidote trip to continue the learning and to help the institution hold itself accountable to its own history and the Dakota land it occupies. And there is much yet to learn. I love St. Kate's. I love what she stands for and who she works for, and I am honored to serve her mission and her students. And like so many other historically white institutions in Minnesota that are conditioned by the violent legacies and privileges of settler colonialism, St. Kate's must come to terms with its past and become a more inclusive community of learning if it is to survive and thrive in higher ed. So I'm deeply grateful to the Minnesota Humanities Center for providing the expertise, the curriculum, and the leadership to help catalyze this institutional transformation. The Minnesota Humanities Center recognizes that the future is ours to shape. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and go ahead. We don't have a lot of time, but we definitely want to hear from you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Lindsay Erdman. I'm a Marine Corps veteran, a Minnesota Humanities Center program participant, and a 2017 Veteran Voices awardee. I joined the military as a way to create opportunity for myself. And so within less than a week, I was shipped off to boot camp. And the Marine Corps is still the only branch of service that hasn't fully integrated recruit training based on gender. While I was in the Marine Corps, I experienced chronic sexual harassment and gender bias. I was told by drill instructors that women in the Marine Corps have two options, and I'm going to censor this, and that's either to be described the way that we describe women who are opinionated and that starts with a B, and then women that act on their biological nature to have sex that starts with an S. There were assumptions made about myself and my female peers that we were only promoted and received awards because we had sex with our superiors. In the last year of my service, I was sexually assaulted, and my mental health quickly deteriorated. I felt worthless, hopeless, and I gave up. I didn't have the strength to fight back anymore. And when I was honorably discharged from the military, I felt ashamed, embarrassed, and angry about my service. While I was a social work student at the University of St. Thomas, I found out about the Minnesota Humanities Center Veteran Voices program. It appealed to me because of its educational foundation and skill development opportunities. The Minnesota Humanities Center and the Veteran Voices program means so much to me. Being a participant in programming has empowered me to find my voice and speak my truth, as well as challenge me to face my trauma and seek treatment. The Veteran Voices program has restored my commitment to serve my community as an advocate and ally through storytelling and relationship building. Last summer, I planned a Women Veterans storytelling event in collaboration with the Minnesota Historical Society at Historic Fort Snelling, which examined the mental health impacts of military service and also highlighted our resiliency. I'm currently planning a Veterans Day event, which will include storytelling and a panel discussion on how veterans can use their voices to be advocates for change. The community partnerships and event structures are directly modeled after my experience in the Veteran Voices storytelling program. The Minnesota Humanities Center and Veteran Voices program are invaluable resources for Minnesota veterans and to our great state. Saying thank you to a veteran is not enough. I encourage this committee to continue to fund the Minnesota Humanities Center in 2019 and beyond. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for your service to our country, and I'm sorry for, but thank you. Where are we at? Chair Hausman, do you have any final comments?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, in the interest of time, we'll take any questions, but I know we have another group in front of us, so if you would like us to wrap it up there, we're fine with that.
No, it was really good and very informative. Any questions from members? I don't see any. I just want to acknowledge recently we had the opportunity, the Speaker Hortman had a day that all the tribes from around Minnesota, which you mentioned in your presentation there, Ms. Birchall, I'm not very good with names. So anyways, in our packet was Why Treaties Matter, and I believe that's, you know, we acknowledge the legacy effort, you know, being partners with that, and that was in all of our member packets that we all 134 of us received. So thank you for that, and seeing no questions, do you have any final comments, Representative Hausman? Thank you. With that, I'll move that our Hausman renews her motion that House File 1474 be laid over for possible inclusion. So thank you very much for coming. And again, thank you. That was. So with that, we'd like to bring the education, Department of Education folks up in the regional libraries. And thank you, students, for coming today. And hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. So we have 15 minutes to cover the whole world of libraries. Wow.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Nelson. I work at the Minnesota Department of Education, serving as the state librarian. I'm here today with Liz Lynch, who's the executive director of the Lake Agassiz Regional Library, which is headquartered up in Moorhead. And we're here this afternoon to talk a little bit about the impact that the legacy funds have had on residents of Minnesota through public library systems. As an employee of the Department of Education, we do like to start our presentations with an acknowledgement that equity is at the foundation of all the work that we're doing, so we put up this slide as just a reminder of that. My job this afternoon is just to give you some facts and figures about the arts and cultural heritage appropriation that goes to the regional library systems. And Liz's job is to let you know about the impact and what difference it's made for people. The annual appropriation since 2010 for libraries has varied anywhere between 2.1 and 4.5 million. That's distributed among 12 regional public library systems that cover all 87 counties in the state. Over the 10 years, the appropriation amount has been just over 29 million, had just over 21,000 programs held, with over 3 million, which is about three-fifths of the population attending a program at a library, and the partnerships that have been built statewide, which is really important to me, is over 11,000. So those are ways that the library has been connecting with community to address the needs through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This is just a visual of the library system, so you can get a sense of the vision with that. The purpose of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund for libraries is to provide educational opportunities in the arts, history, literary arts, and cultural heritage of Minnesota. I think over the last 10 years, Minnesota's regional public libraries have delivered on that purpose in many different ways on a continual basis, and have offered thousands of opportunities for residents to enjoy things that they may not have otherwise had an experience with. The Lake Agassiz Library is representing here today for the regional public library systems, and just as a point of context, since 2010, they've just received just under $1.5 million. So in the scheme of the whole legacy amendment, it's not that great of a dollar amount. But with that, they've been able to offer over 3,800 programs attended by more than 61,000 people, and developed 137 partnerships with their community as they're doing their work. I think Lake Agassiz is a great example of the ways in which the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund is improving the lives of Minnesotans. And I will turn it over to Ms. Lynch to fill you in on the details.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch.
Hello.
Welcome. Sorry.
My name is Liz Lynch, and I'm the director of the Lake Agassiz Regional Library System, and I thank you for the opportunity to speak here today about our experience with the Legacy Funds. Lake Agassiz Regional Library is located in northwest Minnesota. We have service locations or public libraries in 22 locations, and we provide service in the counties of Polk, Clearwater, Norman, Mahnomen, Clay, Becker, and Wilkin counties. It's hard to believe that it's been 10 years since the beginning of the legacy funding. I remember when I first heard about the Clean Water, Land, and Legacy Amendment and that libraries would be receiving funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. I wondered what this would mean for our regional library systems, our communities, and honestly, my workload. But I never would have imagined what a gift it would be and what kind of an impact it would make on not only our communities, but the individuals we serve. Today I'm going to talk specifically about the programs that we've offered in communities served by Lake Agassiz Regional Library. But please remember that there are 12 regional library systems across the state that have offered similar experiences and have had as much success, or may, in some cases, maybe even more. The 12 regional public library systems have used this funding to provide free programs and experiences in all 356 public libraries in the state, sharing the rich historical and cultural stories of Minnesota. Minnesota public libraries have been providing programming and educational experiences for community members for many years, long before Legacy. However, Legacy funding has allowed us to take programming to a new level. Legacy funding has allowed us to take a step back and take a look at the big picture of programming for all ages, our lifelong learners. It's also given Minnesotans the opportunity to learn more about Minnesota culture, artists, authors, musicians, and historians from our own backyard. I am here representing rural Minnesota, where these opportunities simply would not exist without the partnership between legacy funds and public libraries. We recognize that poverty and transportation are issues in our communities, which is why we pride ourselves on bringing quality educational programs to our community centers, our schools, nursing homes, assisted living centers, and of course, our public libraries, as we work to improve the quality of life in our communities and provide that real sense of community that every citizen deserves. We know how much Minnesotans have loved and appreciated the programs that we've offered around our region over the past 10 years because they tell us. After every event, participants fill out an evaluation form. They call us, they stop us on the street and in the grocery store. They send us letters and they tell us how much these opportunities mean to them. They tell us that their family of four never would have been able to afford to attend such an event if they had to purchase the tickets. Others tell us that because they don't have transportation, they never would have been able to have this type of experience if it hadn't been brought to their community. We are making a difference in the lives of Minnesotans from corner to corner with this funding. Lake Agassiz Regional Library has offered hundreds of legacy programs around the region over the past 10 years, but I'm going to share a few specific examples that illustrate the impacts that it's made on our communities. So the first story is an example about building community and bringing people together. When a musician was touring around Lake Agassiz Regional Library, he made an afternoon stop in Halstead, population 570, and was a bit surprised by the size of the audience. While he may have anticipated about 20 to 25 people, he was a little shocked to find a packed house waiting for him. The program was offered at the local nursing home for the residents, their families, and of course, the general public. Last minute, we were contacted by the school to see if they could bus children to the event as well. This small event turned into a much, much larger community event. This is an example that includes three institutions working together to provide a true intergenerational event for the whole community. My next story is about improving quality of life for our lifelong learners. When Lake Agassiz Regional Library sponsored a bus trip from Crookston, Minnesota to Moorhead for a winter concert, the bus made stops in Hendrum, Shelley, and Halstead along the way, three very small communities, to pick up members of the community. The bus was full, and most of the attendees were quite elderly. This was truly a community event, both the bus ride and the actual concert. Many of those attending the concert told us that they would not have had the means to purchase the tickets to the concert, plus many of them no longer had vehicles to drive, especially in the winter. We heard stories of homebound individuals with very little social interaction, very little money, and very little to look forward to. The legacy-sponsored bus trip was an event that they looked forward to for months. We often hear that people in our region can't afford tickets to events for the whole family, nor can they afford the transportation. Many are living paycheck to paycheck or living in isolation for the long winters and beyond. This is about bringing opportunities to our residents and our residents to the opportunities and giving them something to look forward to. This photo obviously was not from that particular winter concert because everyone is wearing shorts and the sun is shining. This next example, this is one of my favorites of all time. This is about 90-year-old Art Olson from Mentor, Minnesota, and it was fabulous. This is about experiences that help us learn how we learn about our past and discover heroes living in our communities. When Minnesota author Jack Elhi visited the small town of Fertile, population 833, he never could have expected the connection that would unfold during his presentation. His book, The Nazi and the Psychiatrist, explores the relationship between an American psychiatrist and Hermann Göring, one of the most powerful figures in the Nazi Party. The book is set during the 1940s when Göring was awaiting trial as a war criminal. As the author shared the images from the time period, Art Olson, age 90, resident of nearby Mentor, Minnesota, spoke up and said, That's where we were. He then revealed to the group that he had been Gehring's prison guard during in 1946, and he was the American soldier who had been assigned to transporting the war criminal from his cell to the courtroom. Art Olson proceeded to tell the audience members and the audience about his experiences guarding the war criminal and even the details about their conversations. This unexpected connection left the author in disbelief, and the audience was stunned. This next example is about starting community conversations. When Minnesota author Kim Park Nelson traveled to Detroit Lakes to give a presentation on her book, Invisible Asians, a community conversation was sparked. Invisible Asians is about her life and the lives of over 60 Korean-American adoptees in Minnesota following the Korean War, and about how there are more Korean-American adoptees per capita in Minnesota than in any other state. Most of the attendees were from the Detroit Lakes area, but we learned that a handful had traveled from all corners of Minnesota to attend the event because they were either parents who had adopted children from Korea or were Korean Americans who were adopted by Minnesotans. Nelson's presentation alone was very informative and interesting, but the discussion following the presentation was even more riveting and emotional, as one by one, the audience members who had lived this part of Minnesota history spoke up and told their story. These Minnesotans were allowed to open up, some of them for the first time, about their experiences and were willing to share their stories. It opened all of our eyes to a cultural part of Minnesota that many of us knew nothing about.
Thank you very much. We're going to have to just kind of, if you could really wrap up, and I'm sorry. These are great stories, though, so I'm sorry.
Can I just...
Yep, really go fast.
Okay. I would just like to close with one last thank you letter that I had received from a participant at a program who was on a bus trip. This is what she had to say. This trip served as a vacation for my son and I, since we can't afford to take a typical vacation. My place of employment has cut my hours for a while now. When you have a mortgage to pay, groceries to buy, lights to keep on, and gas for a vehicle, a leisure trip is strictly out of the question. The Legacy Fund gave us the opportunity to leave the stress of everyday living and jump on a bus and not have to worry about driving. I got to check out the breathtaking views of the Minnesota landscape you miss while driving. Just in conclusion, it's been a lot of work to add legacy programming to our already long list of services offered in libraries across the state, but it has certainly been worth it. With the funds from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, we have been improving the quality of life for Minnesotans both in the metro and the rural areas. And this is why it's important to continue to receive the current appropriation of legacy funding for years to come. The stories I have shared with you today are why the people of Minnesota voted for this amendment to improve the lives of Minnesotans. We are offering educational and enrichment opportunities to our lifelong learners. We are giving citizens something to look forward to. We are improving their quality of life, and we are creating a sense of community. On behalf of the 12 regional public library systems and residents all over Minnesota, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lynch and Ms. Nelson. I think it's really great to hear your stories and hear that it's out there going, you know, doing good work. In the metro, we very much, you know, appreciate the legacy, and it's really neat for me to hear the, what's going on in greater Minnesota as well. So thank you very much. With that, I think we're there, and I'm sorry for being brief on you, but with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.